The Enrichment Center once again reminds you that Android Hell is a real place where you will be sent at the first sign of defiance.
Auto noise filter on the Q output. Oh man.
I was like, did we just do a remix of Patient Zero that I was unaware of?
No, not really. At least not directly. This is Pure Decking for Thursday, July 20, what is it, 7th?
28th.
July 28th, in the year that I have forgotten how to work a calendar. I'm Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I don't even know what show number this is. I am so messed up right now fixing this shit. Yeah, I made a mistake. Never, ever upgrade a production system, you know, without checking it way in advance.
Or don't upgrade the production system the day you intend to use it.
Yeah. This is Pure Decking number 229 for the date I read previously. I've already forgotten what it was. I'm Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state being ruled by the most offended, information security, and obviously not drinking enough bourbon. Speaking of which, I am drinking Red Stag. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Sam Adams Heaven or Hells.
Interesting. Another real question is it's just me and Madman tonight, so everybody else decided to go be boring and not show up. But we got the chat room. I suppose I could read out the chat room, you know, if I really wanted to copy off Newsreel what he was doing 5 years ago or whatever the hell.
Oh no. We have the AT&T voice simulator. Dicro strikes me as British. I don't know if he actually is, but that's the voice we're going to use if we pull up the AT&T voice simulator. He's going to be the British robot.
Oh, that's what we're going to do. We're going to install... This wouldn't even be that hard to script up. Get one of the voice engines and, you know, have it just reading IRC and reading the screen names and assigning different identities randomly. It's like the podcast is just an hour of whatever's going on IRC. And I don't know if that would work very well or not, because we have long time dead or a lot of time where nobody does anything in there. Feed it RSS feeds every once in a while to stoke the conversation. Or just if we'd let everybody know what was going on, it would work. You'd connect to the stream and you just try to time it correctly so you don't flood the robot. We're sending somebody to dump ASCII art in there, and the thing would just be stuck sitting there saying slash tick tick slash hex hex. It's like, what's it doing? It's spelling out Picard doing palm face.
I threw in an ASCII owl. It's having a seizure.
Anyways,
oh God, go away!
What? What was that thing?
I had a cat try to steal something from my desk. It tried to steal a bottle of pills.
Is that what the ding was?
Yeah, it was going after a bottle of hydrocodone. My cat could be addicted to opium.
I'm curious why you have a bottle of hydrocodone next to the workstation, but you know what? Never mind. I'm not worried about it.
There's where I keep my beer. Where the hell else am I going to chase it? God, you trying to swallow those pills whole? Dry? What kind of crazy man are you?
Vodka is. But anyways. No, Psychros, we are not MST3K-ing the DNC. I think their own audience is having fun with that right now. There's like massive walkouts planned and all kinds of other shit going on. I mean, I don't think we need to stoke that fire. So,
yeah, half the DNC might shoot their nominee just to get Bernie elected. I think that's the one reason Hillary didn't make him the VP.
Oh, that's what that ding was. My 3D print is done. I set up push bullet on the Octopi, So I get a picture from the webcam whenever it's done, and it looks good. Cool. So let's move on to the discussion topic here. This one is from, I'm not going to dig up the sound clip because the broadcast box is like delicate right now, so I don't want to go fucking with it in the middle of a show if I don't have to. It's from the Zionist Vice News. I can't do that voice very well. And let's see, it's from motherboardvice.com. And, of course, the headline is, Sony, Microsoft, and other gadget makers are violating federal warranty law. So I suppose I could give you the gist of this, or we could read it out. The gist of it is those little warranty void or remove stickers, turns out those aren't enforceable. There's a law from 1975 called the Magnus Moss Warranty Act, and this is the law that a lot of people, when people talk about anti-lemon laws with your car, like, you know, the fact that you can have your car serviced and it doesn't destroy the warranty if you take it down to Joe's Garage versus an authorized dealer repair. And even though the dealers will tell you, oh no, you got to bring it here and have it serviced under warranty, they can't cancel your warranty just because you had the oil changed somewhere else. You know what I mean? And it turns out that law is written rather broadly and applies to anything electronic that costs more than like $15. You are allowed, let's see, here's the line from the article. To be clear, federal law says you can open your electronics without voiding the warranty, regardless of what the language of the warranty says. So pretty much nobody's really questioned these warranty void if removed stickers that are, well, they're on every damned thing. And it turns out those aren't legal. I think it's hilarious. Pretty much it goes on. They start using examples from automotive industry. Then they get into cell phones, how especially Apple says if you have your phone, any problems with your phone, you take it anywhere other than an Apple-authorized repair center, it voids the warranty. Well, the big thing the warranty doesn't cover is a busted screen, which is, of course, is the most common reason people's cell phone break, is you bust the screen, right? But, the glass. Everybody's carrying them around in their pocket, chucking them around. Hell, I just busted a screen not that long ago, although it turns out, AT&T's insurance program's actually not that bad. So, but yeah, so, it was always a joke back in the day. It's like, oh, do you still have a warranty on a component inside your computer? Fuck that. Scrape that sticker off. Get it open there. Mod it, you know? And at least going to LAN parties and shit like that, that was always the joke. Go in to mod shit, custom it. But pretty much the example they give is if you replace a busted screen and then 6 months later the headphone jack dies, they can't claim that you having that screen worked on, you know, down at the local watch or player place or someplace that says they do screen repair, they can't claim unless they can prove, and the onus is on the manufacturer to prove that screen repair caused the headphone jack to die. And because of the costs involved from taking a company to court over the warranty, nobody's ever actually challenged this thing. So when a company says, oh, no, warranty's not covered, we're not covering this under warranty because, you know, you scraped the sticker off or we think you've opened it, you're actually allowed to open your devices no matter what their warranty says. It's just, it hasn't been financially feasible to challenge them in court, I think, because when this all was written back in 1975, they were primarily thinking of cars, and when you're talking about electronics, you're usually talking about large cases, you know, in high-end audio gear where it's kind of expected you're going to open it up and tweak things versus today where it's all glued together, and if you open it up, it's usually involving a vice.
Now, this wouldn't help the individuals that were fucked over, but it would ding Microsoft, Sony, and have them change their ways. Do a class action lawsuit.
I don't know. The article didn't say anything about it, but they did say that You know, representatives for Apple, Microsoft, and Sony's PlayStation division did not respond to Motherboard's request for comment. To be clear, not every manufacturer puts this type of language in their warranty agreements, and such language is also found in medical equipment and other electronics. So it's also boilerplate at this point, right? I mean, they've been putting it in warranties for so long that nobody's really questioned it when it comes to these electronics. Now, the rest of the article, after talking about how it's actually, you can't claim that somebody loses their warranty just because they opened it up, they then go in on to the right to repair, which is an interesting conversation. What's the guy's name on YouTube? Lewis Rossman, I believe? It's a guy up in New York who runs a MacBook repair shop. And he does some YouTube videos and shows micro soldering and doing surface mount repair, mostly with a hot air gun and Lux and, you know, an iron. It's like, dude's doing micro soldering with an iron. It's like, damn, dude. But
I don't think this applies to tweaking Sacros. Sacros just asked, does it involve repair and tweaking? I think it just involves repair. If you add a component that's not actually in the device, like a mod chip or something, I can see how they could argue that violates that the warranty because it could affect, you know, the way the actual machine works, even though I don't think a mod chip's going to hurt it.
You have to show how the device... Basically, you have to show... The example they use in a car is if you go over to a buddy's house and bolt on an aftermarket intake, they can't claim that's the reason the electrical in your brake lights failed, because there's no way for that. But if you bolt on an aftermarket intake and then... Maybe that wasn't the one in the article, but my understanding was then if you go over to a buddy's house and bolt on the aftermarket intake, they can't claim that the warranty on your engine is void because you put that intake on it, unless they can show, well, you put this intake on it, then you drove through 3 feet of standing water, so the fact that your engine is full of water now, you know, shit that's obviously not covered, right? So, because it was your modification that damaged it versus... So with a mod chip... Ah, geez, that gets touchy, because a mod chip is expressly designed to fuck with the logic of a console, right? Or, yeah. Well, whatever you're modding. So I could easily see the argument that, well, you soldered this mod chip in wrong, and that was always the joke. You see people who couldn't solder for shit who'd, you know, 3 foot, you know, 3 feet of solder on top of a circuit in an original Xbox, and somebody trying to put a mod chip in the damn thing. But the right to repair is interesting because it's more than just saying you can't void a warranty because somebody's opened it up and, you know... I've seen those warranty void stickers over, like, the hard drive bay in laptops before. It's like your warranty is void if you opened it up to put more RAM in it or put a hard drive in it. And that's bullshit. Your warranty is not void because you put more RAM in a laptop. Not only is it a supported upgrade, there's a socket for it. I mean, it's not like you're breaking out the iron. Right, and I think within reason you can come up with some pretty decent examples of this. But right to repair is more than just, you know, not voiding warranty. It gets into the idea that you can't use things like copyright to prevent people from discussing schematics, and you know, you shouldn't be able to make it impossible to get replacement parts, because back to cell phones. How many cell phones end up in the garbage because somebody busted their screen and it was a 2-year-old cell phone, so it wasn't really worth fixing? They just went and got a new one, so they threw the old one in the trash, right? Well, it's because you can't buy screens for half of these devices, and usually when you have somebody doing, you know, part repair for older phones, the way they're getting the parts, or this goes for laptops too, and that's why I again reference Lewis Rossman, the way they're getting the parts is they're finding busted ones. Like, okay, you've got a problem with your logic board, so they take the logic board out of a phone with a busted screen and put it in yours because your screen's good, and get you a working phone again. They can't just go buy the parts they need. They have to, you know, salvage it from trash, because the manufacturers not only won't sell it, or don't sell it, but they refuse and even sue if somebody is selling replacement parts for these things. So, and the idea of a right to repair is having the government step in and require them at least not to interfere with people repairing these devices. Because I know Rossman got in trouble for showing on his YouTube channel a schematic he got off a forum somewhere for one of the MacBooks he was repairing, because he was showing how to do the repair on the MacBook. And yeah, he got in trouble for that because they claimed that him showing the devices and the named vias was copyright infringement, which I was under the impression that it had to have, like in 3D printing, they say when you're designing a part, if it doesn't have some kind of intrinsic artistic value, it's really hard to claim copyright on, you know, a functional piece if there's no artistic style to it. You know what I mean? You can't patent the shape of a hook, for example. You can't go in and say, we've designed a hook, it's now patented, because it's an obvious mechanical use, and the law gets kind of specific about that.
Well, so, on any patent, it's supposed to be something that someone in that field would not have readily recognized or thought up. It couldn't be common sense for someone who knew what they were doing you're in.
I might be confusing patent and copyright law, but I do remember seeing that copyright, I think it's copyright that says it can't be a purely functional, there has to be some kind of an artistic value to it. And you know, even if it's just something as simple as your name stamped in the side, you know what I mean? But you got to have something about it that's not just a pure functional shape or design. It has
one, you're not copywriting the thing, you're copywriting your name.
Right.
I thought copyright was mostly not things. They were like ideas and
Languages or works of literature. It gets nebulous pretty quickly, because you can copyright music and you can copyright a book, but you can't exactly copyright words in the book, although you could theoretically claim names. So I guess the curse words from Red Dwarf and Farscape that they made up to get around censors, I guess you could claim copyright on those.
Yeah, but they've also moved in and saying languages are systems and can't be copyrighted. And so you can't copyright Klingon. But for some reason, there's a copyright on Elven. Tolkien blew some people before he died, all I can think of.
Well, but in Rossman's case, it was copyrighted on the schematics, which schematics for an electronic circuit are a purely functional thing. I don't know how you copyright
that. Yeah, that would be a patent on the circuit. But still, you have a right to repair your electronics.
You can't. These logic circuits they don't pass the obvious test. So anybody who knows, you know, surface mount circuit design, hell, most of the time people aren't even designing it. They're pulling it up in Eagle and letting Eagle lay out the traces, but that's not the point. So I don't know. But anyway, so Apple actively went after people who were, you know, under copyright law, who were trading schematics to MacBooks because they weren't authorized repair stations. So, you know, they're saying get back to the article here. Electronics manufacturers and auto manufacturers have been working to secure monopoly on repairing their own products using a variety of means. They asked that the Library of Congress make certain types of repair illegal under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. I think Deer Trackers did this, where they said, oh no, there's copyright on our schematics, so you can't hook a computer up to it and reprogram it. So, yeah.
That's beyond fucked up. Now, I'll crap on the Digital Millennium Copyright Act because it was horribly written, but there was a slightly moral and good idea behind it. Piracy is wrong because I don't want to use stealing something, because whatever you're taking still exists. But you're not paying for something that someone is selling, and it's their right to sell it. They do have a right to protect what they've worked on. But that doesn't prevent you from repairing something that you've already purchased.
Well, the general idea there is that they have the monopoly on repairing it and can charge you three times what it should cost to repair it is, you know, outside if they had to compete with independent repair shops. So, But anyways, so what's the rest of, let me finish out some of the article here. They asked in the Copyright Act at the state level, they lobby against fair repair bills that require them to sell replacement parts to consumers and repair shops. So they're requiring them to sell replacement parts. That I can see both ways, because I don't like the idea of forcing a business to do something. But if you're selling a product, it does kind of make sense that you should be able to service it. You know what I mean? And if you don't want to take the servicing of it, or you don't want people to service it, I don't know, because you shouldn't be required to sell something. But at the same time, I hate the idea that you could have a manufacturer say, no, we're not selling logic boards and screens for these busted phones. Because, I mean, Madman, you're the prime example of this. How long have you been using that cell phone you have?
Oh, God, years. If so, that thing breaks right now, they don't sell that phone anymore.
Yeah.
I use it because it still works. I upgrade literally when something breaks. My phone, I use it to call people, text people, GPS.
Yeah. And of course, I'm a technology whore, so I usually buy the latest and greatest. But I very rarely bust my phones, though I have busted a couple here lately. So, I mean, I've got an S3 that I haven't thrown away because I've got the screen repair kit for it. It happened. But it's still a perfectly good phone. And I hate the idea of just chucking it in the trash because it's perfectly good. There's nothing wrong with the damn thing. I just recently got done throwing away stacks of old computers because they still fucking worked. They weren't like Commodores or anything. Those are fun. I mean, these are just like old Pentiums and shit like that. Stuff that not worth keeping. Nobody wants it. And it's like, you know, you finally just get rid of it because but it still worked. So it's like,
where you are, you should have seen if there was a hacker space you could have just dropped the shit off at and had people play with it.
I did. They wanted money to take them.
They wanted money to take them?
Yep.
They wanted you to pay them to give them shit?
Yes.
That's fucked up.
Why do you think I didn't do it? I tried to take them to a couple places that claim they do electronic recycling, and they wanted more money than the charity did for them.
Yeah, well, the electronic recycling, they're just pulling up the batteries and anything that could leak into groundwater, and they have to actually pay recycling fees for those.
Yeah, so... yeah. Anyways, but yeah, I mean, like I said, none of it was like bad stuff, but none of it was anything people really wanted to use anymore either. Like, this was shit sold that even if you put a Linux on there, you couldn't do anything modern with it. But yeah, I don't finally got rid of all that stuff. But if you can't repair this stuff, it just goes in the landfill, right?
Also, go with car manufacturing. You can get aftermarket parts. If a manufacturer doesn't want to build it, fine. Don't force them to build it. Just don't stop anyone else from building it either.
Well, and that's the problem. Apple does. Apple specifically, but I'm sure Samsung and the others do it as well. They use copyright to prevent anyone from making replacement logic boards or replacement screens that happen to fit the same parameters. So what a lot of these repair shops do is they order in bulk off the, like AliExpress and Banggood, you know, people claiming they've got these parts, hoping that, like, out of the five they get, a handful of them are useful.
Cycross, he's not going to do that. The blinking lights keep him up at night.
What did Cycross want me to do?
You could always turn that old hardware into routers, firewalls, stuff like that.
We've done that
blinking
before.
Lights keep you up.
We have done that before. I did have the old computer that was a router for the longest time.
Oh, you weren't the only one. Cause did the same thing for a while.
I'm actually getting ready to replace my hacked up netbook with a little Zotac mini PC for my PFSense box. Just because, as much as I enjoy the laptop with the ribbon cable hanging out of it with a PCIe network card kind of half bodge soldered on there, sitting in a 3D printed case, I want something that's a little bit more resilient. And the Zotac will take up less space. So,
was that a Hackintosh thing you did for a while, too? Wasn't that thing a Hackintosh?
Fuck, I've lost track of what's been on that thing. That's done a lot. It probably was Hackintoshed at one point, sure. But
yeah, you shouldn't stop someone else from manufacturing a part. Because I can see it is wrong to force somebody to make something if they don't want to.
Yeah.
But it's equally wrong to force someone not to make something they want to. I can see Apple has first dibs on selling their parts. It's their shit. Want to pass up that market? Fine. Alibaba can make it.
Cykros, if I want to set up a BBS, just seeing what he's put in the chat room there. If I want to set up a BBS, I'll probably use a Raspi to do it. And instead of traditional BBS, I think it'd be much more interesting to set one up in one of the ham radio bands. Because apparently there's a whole bunch of ham radio text over the analog signals that I think is much more interesting than just voice. But data connections over ham.
So flashlight or the guru will eat you?
You're thinking of the Colossal Cave Adventure, I think? No, that's not Colossal Cave. Oh, shit. The Brass Lantern. There were three of them. Some bitch. I can't remember the name of the game now. Doesn't matter. Anyways, so, yeah, evidence suggests that these, back to the article here, we've been talking about it for almost half an hour, evidence suggests these tickers and agreements have the desired effect of making consumers afraid to open their electronics. There are dozens of frantic forum posts and Yahoo answer questions from people who've opened their devices and are worried they've ordered their warranties. And the people who sell replacement warranty stickers and tutorials about complex methods of removing them without breaking them, and a YouTube video about using a specialized knife to remove the stickers. So, I mean, and you know, the fact that they're not valid, you can't actually enforce these things. So, it's flat out deceptive.
Yeah, so. I think some lawyers can make a ton of money, make it class action. And the reason I say the lawyers profit from that, in a class action lawsuit, you'll get $1.50. A lawyer will get $4 million. But at least it fucks over Microsoft and Apple if they're trying to screw you over.
Yeah, and the thing is with that one, that it really just comes down to people don't know what the laws are. A lot of people know about the anti-lemon laws because people used to get burned about that. And now they got educated, and now the car manufacturers are a lot more careful about that kind of shit. People don't make a big deal out of it when they're on the phone. They don't start quoting the law. They don't threaten to take Microsoft to court over it, or Sony, or Apple, or any of them. So they get away with it, not because they're legally correct, but just because nobody's challenging them on it.
Unless you're modding, the warranty, at least for Microsoft, for their Xboxes, it's pretty good. And even if it's out of warranty, I had my Xbox repaired through them once when they still actually cared about the first Xbox. It was cheap, and I got it in a day. So I sent it there, they sent it back.
Yeah, and then it exploded, and I had to fix it.
Yeah, that was 3 years later.
But that ruins my punchline when you point out that fact.
I mean, the repair, it was worth it. Now, don't get me wrong. When you fixed it, it now plays all of the Nintendo games, Duke Nukem, and a few other things. So your repair was much better. Of course, it wasn't the repair. I think I might have done something after that, but still, it was improved.
All right. So first news article here. This is from DefenseOne.com. Law enforcement officials say it's on the tech world and privacy advocates to prove that a backdoor would undermine data security.
Okay, here's how you prove that. Your Honor, here's a way for unauthorized people to gain access to a machine. It's called a backdoor.
It gets crazy, okay? So it's up to tech firms and privacy advocates to show exactly, specifically, and technically how the government's proposed backdoors into encrypted cell phones and other products would hurt data security, current and former law enforcement officials told lawmakers last week. At least one member of the Senate Armed Services Committee appears to agree. Take a wild guess which one. And that's going on to propel the long-running debate into some strange new territory. So blah, 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 blah. They're talking about how they have more than 200 iPhones sitting in evidence lockers. Keith L. Weinstein, a former assistant attorney general for national security at the Department of Justice, told lawmakers that the burden is on technology companies and privacy advocates to show how backdoors would harm user security rather than on law enforcement officials to prove that altering the encryption scheme would be safe. So, okay, let me just read this quote before I start tearing this to pieces. For the tech industry and civil liberties groups, this means laying out technically specific support for the contention that a government accommodation would undermine the integrity of default encryption. They should provide hard data that demonstrates exactly how and how much each possible type of accommodation would impact their encryption systems. It is only when Congress receives that data that it can knowledgeably perform its deliberative function and balance the potential cybersecurity dangers proposed by government accommodation against the national security and law enforcement benefits of having such an accommodation. There have been arguments raised as to why this, meaning backdoors or illegal accommodations, might end up unduly compromising encryption, which is a really important thing for society. But the only way you're going to be able to do your job and balance the need for the accommodation against the impact it might have on encryption is for them to show exactly, specifically, and technically how this damage would come about. And we haven't heard that yet. Yes, you have. And until we hear that, you can't do your job and come up with a solution, he said. And then there were more. And then they go in and they talk to Matthew Green, a computer science technology expert and cryptographer at Johns Hopkins University, who said that Wallstein's assertion that the technology community's job to prove that backdoors were harmful as opposed to the law enforcement's job to prove that they were safe reflected a faulty understanding of technology. The problem is that's not how computer security works, he says, and I'll back him up on that. You can't tell how secure something is until it's been reliably attacked by people with the resources and expertise that you expect to attack your protocol in real life. In the case of exceptional access systems, that means attackers with nation-state level resources like foreign intelligence agencies. No tech company has the resources or the time to perform a penetration test to those standards, he said. But at least one senator is open to the idea. Senator John motherfucking McCain, Republican from Arizona, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, promised more hearings on the issue as the committee prepares to draft legislation or possibly ongoing organize a commission. Members of the technology community would be compelled to testify. Even if they don't want to come here, this committee has subpoena power, McCain said.
And just one moment. Everyone raise your glasses. Fuck you, John McCain.
Fuck you, now John drink. McCain. Drinking. Good work. Now, so, first problem. The guy saying that obviously might have an idea as to what he's talking about. And the reason I say that is because what he's doing is he's looking at the fact that he knows they cannot prove it safe. We are going to add a backdoor. Backdoors get caught all the damn time. Go check out CVE scores for them. F5 got caught putting the same SSL certificate inside every device they sold, or SSH key, I should say. How many times has Symantec's backdoors been busted? Microsoft's backdoors have been busted. They get found all the damned time. So, I mean, how many links? Go Google how to reset. How to reset some of these encryptions that are out there. Some of the crappier ones. Go. There's guides online about getting into routers and shit. So believe me, these backdoors, they don't work. And I can tell you,
they work perfectly. They let someone that's not supposed to be in the system in the system. That's the idea of a backdoor.
When I worked for the university, I discovered backdoors in 6 different systems that we reported back to manufacturers, of which none of them could change them. And their passwords were really stupid. 42 spelled backwards is not a secure password. Sorry.
They should have thrown or 19 in there. There could be Stephen King fans out there.
Doesn't matter. The point is, when you put a backdoor system in, the fact that, only courts can use this... people who are not going to obey the law don't actually care when you say only courts are allowed to use that backdoor. And that key will get discovered. It will be put out on the internet, and then everyone's phone might as well be in the clear. And moreover, because usually if you're making a court order backdoor, that usually means it's more than just them being able to seize a phone and decrypt it. They're going to want remote access, which means the moment somebody gets that key, because we'll all know it's there, if they get the law they want, they'll pass a law, it'll be in the news, and we will all know that backdoor is there, which means everyone's going to start hammering on the devices trying to find it, and all it's going to take is one person who's managed to dump the memory of the damn thing and decrypt it and figure it out, and now everyone will have the backdoor, and it won't be a law enforcement backdoor, it'll be a don't use device because it's got a back, because it's not secure. And they know they cannot prove that it's safe. So instead, they're twisting it around saying, oh, no, no, you technology companies, you have to prove that it's not safe. Because they know, especially when they're saying specifically and technically accurate, they're asking for this very, very precise information, and they're doing that so that no matter what you provide, it's never precise enough. So they can say, well, see, look, they're dodging the question. Go ahead, Mevan.
I was just going to say, and that's why we put back doors in our military encryption? Oh, wait a minute! We don't do that because we don't want Russia to have our fucking launch codes.
It's not like they would use them.
No!
They would just release them back to us when it's politically opportune for them. Oh, wait, that was the DNC.
I fucking love that. In the Donald's tweet afterward, can anyone ask Russia if they have the missing 32,000 or 3,200 emails from Hillary's server? Maybe they can turn those to the FBI, too.
With Hillary, rock. And Hillary said, those extra emails are a national security violation. Oh, so you deleted departmental documents that you were supposed to return back in? Yeah, how is she not in jail?
But back to this, a very simple, easily to set up demonstration can show Congress how dumb an idea this is if they're having trouble understanding it. You take a door, set in a frame, put it in the middle of the House of Representatives with a lock on it. Say, this is the front door to your house. There's one key to it. Now you want us to take an exact copy of this key and hand it to everyone in existence. Is your front door still secure with the lock that you put on it to keep people that you don't want out of your fucking house? That's what they're asking for.
Yeah, basically.
You're going to keep the honest people out of whatever you're in because I don't want to snoop through your phone, mainly because you have a boring life just like I do. But still, you're
and if
only
you're looking
keeping
at weird
like
porn,
me out.
I'd rather not know, truthfully.
Oh yeah, there's lots of things about me my friends shouldn't know just because we want to remain friends and not have me looked at weird.
All right, next article is from Ars Technica. Tim Sweeney claims that Microsoft will remove Win32 and destroy Steam. So Tim Sweeney doesn't like Windows 10 or Microsoft's Universal Windows Platform, the common development platform that allows developers to create software that will run on Windows on PCs, phones, tablets, HoloLens, and the Xbox. In March, he published an op-ed in The Guardian saying that the Universal Windows Platform can, should, and must die because he claimed Microsoft could use the Universal Windows Platform to create a walled garden, like Apple did on the iPhone, with UWP games not available through competing stores such as Steam. Still apparently concerned with the health of PC gaming, Sweeney is now claiming through an interview in the print-only Edge magazine that Microsoft will use Windows updates to kill Steam. So his complaints about UWP were technically off-base. His issues are based on the assumption that UWP apps had to be individually vetted by Microsoft and could only be delivered by the Windows Store. This is somewhat true in Windows 8. Apps built using the Windows RT platform could not be trivial sideloaded, but the ability was officially restricted to enterprise users only. It's not true in Windows 10. Sideloading is enabled by default in Windows 10 because Microsoft backed off of a bunch of shit in Windows 10 after they got the feedback. The Windows 32 API, Sweeney's worried that Microsoft is going to kill it. And it's a bit of a clickbaity article. It's a bit of a sensationalist headline. The guy's trying to get attention. And it's because Microsoft is trying to push everybody onto the UWP platform as opposed to the old legacy Win32. And if they succeed in doing that, they're going to break a lot of old software. And most of Steam's library would probably quit working, and most of those games are old enough that unless somebody figured out a compatibility layer, they wouldn't work. So I understand where he's coming from, but the dude is very anti-Microsoft, and I think I don't see Microsoft doing that anytime soon, because the reason people still run Windows is that legacy software works on Windows. I mean, you can grab software that was written for Windows XP, load it up on a modern system, and it will probably work. Might not work well, but it will probably work.
And I think Steam throws enough money. It's a legitimate company. Microsoft isn't going to fuck over Steam.
No. So, if it starts working, I mean, if they really tried to do this by killing the Windows 32 API, they'd be killing a lot more than Steam. And you'd have a lot more people either finding interesting ways to get their systems back on like a Windows 7 or an earlier version of Windows 10 or whatever the operating system at the time, or you just see everybody massively jump ship to Linux and Steam OS. So,
ooh, Steam has an OS. Yeah, I don't care what they do. I can dual boot. I'll play video games.
So, apparently Verizon bought Yahoo. Does anybody care?
I don't know what they could do with Yahoo. Other than just have, yeah, I own Yahoo. I have a search engine no one's...
They also bought AOL. I think they're going to try to merge Yahoo and AOL and try to make a competing Facebook-ish company.
That could actually be cool, especially if they do what Facebook isn't and just allow everyone to speak.
So, all right, well, let's read the article here then. Yahoo is the first website that the author ever visited. His dad took him and his brother to an internet cafe in central London, and it was the portal of the web. The hand-holding portal was at one point worth $125 billion. Today, it was sold for $4.83 billion to U.S. mobile network Verizon. It's a remarkable amount of money for a company whose name has become a shorthand for online businesses falling from grace. Last quarter, Yahoo lost $440 million, and it made a name by... It may have made its name by helping people make sense of the web, but it has long been clear that other companies do a far better job and make more money while doing it. Verizon won't care about that. They want eyeballs, bums on seat, people through the door. And on that measure, Yahoo delivers. Collectively, around 1 billion people flow through Yahoo's sprawl of web properties at least once a month, which is, I bet that's true, because Yahoo owns Flickr. Yahoo owns a bunch of stuff, but there's probably, I mean, Yahoo is the default search engine in several versions of Firefox, which is sometimes annoying. And, but Verizon also bought AOL, and AOL tried to turn itself into an advertising company before it really just became a glorified Hotmail. So, you know, Yahoo still has a lot of people flowing through it. AOL has an advertising network. So,
AOL did a lot of early chat programs and networking.
Yeah, actually, well, back when they were Quantum Link, sure. Let's see. Yeah, Yahoo AOL pairing has been expected for years. Anyways, Verizon's strategy in marrying the companies to create a massive content network of well-respected web properties, sites like Huffington Post, Engadget, Yahoo Finance, and TechCrunch, will now all deliver advertising for Verizon. Advertising that can be more effectively targeting what Verizon knows about its mobile customers. So, it sounds like Verizon is wanting to compete in the Google Facebook space, and so they're buying up Yahoo, they're buying up AOL, and they're hoping to take the existing technology companies and spin them around. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, if they keep their engineers from those two companies, especially if those engineers actually kept, or those companies kept the engineers that knew what they were doing before they started losing money, you could get a nice think tank together and use their intellectual properties and probably make something pretty decent out of it.
Oh, that article was from BBC. I don't know if I said that or not. So, next article is from Ars Technica. Again, paste links for everybody who wants to see that. This is hilarious. So there are rival crypto ransomware gangs, right? And so one of them hacked the keys to the Chimera ransomware and then published them and said, here's their keys. And was it Webroot? Malwarebytes. It was Malwarebytes. So they're actively working on testing it to see if it's real. Yeah, fierce competition in the booming crypto ransomware market works in favor of the victims, whose priceless data is being held hostage. It appears to be what played out on Tuesday, when criminals behind a package known as Mischa, or Mischa, M-I-S-C-H-A, Mischa, published what's purported to be the secret crypto keys for the rival Chimera malware. Earlier this year, we got access to big parts of their development system and included parts of Chimera, in our project, the Mischa developers wrote in a message posted to Pastebin. Additionally, we now release about 3,500 encryption keys from Chimera. Translation, as if breaking into Chimera's developer network and stealing their code wasn't enough, the competing Mischa gang now claims to have leaked the keys that the keys that defanged Chimera. And Malwarebytes is doing the research. That's fantastic. It's like, you know, it's a gang war, only it's on the internet, and instead of killing people, they're releasing crypto keys. I just, how much more cyberpunk can you get? I mean, just...
Don't give them money. Here's what they're selling you for free.
Yeah.
No, guys, if you want to blackmail people for their data, use my shit, not his shit. I already broke the fuck out of it.
No, they didn't break the fuck out of it. That's the thing. You very rarely hear about actual crypto being broken. You hear about they broke into the development system, so they got into their dev servers and found all the keys. So
they didn't break the crypto. Yeah, I guess now they just changed the keys on future versions.
Well, sure, but they've got to re-release all their malware, and that's not as easy as you might think. You ever played Plague Inc., where you're kind of evolving your virus and trying to destroy the world?
Yeah, that's... everyone has trouble with New Zealand for some reason.
Oh, yeah, they closed their borders like nothing. But anyways, New Guinea, I think is what
New Guinea, yeah.
Yeah, but Madagascar used to be really bad about that, too. It's actually Iceland is the one I usually have the hardest time infecting. Not the point. The point is that in those games, you don't directly control what your bots are doing. You're making changes and releasing them. So that's what malware authors have to do. They kind of release it out, and they have to wait for it to propagate out and hope people pick up the new versions. And in the case of ransomware, their machines usually aren't sitting on a CNC channel like they are on a botnet. It's locking up your machine and then sitting there waiting on you to pay them money to hope to get the key back so you can get your files back. Whereas, so, you know, they can release it with new keys, new crypto, but it doesn't do much good for the, you know, 4,000 some odd people who already had it, who they got keys for. So, funny though.
It shows that even bad people can do nice things every so often.
Well, but they're not doing. They're not trying to be nice. They're trying to fuck over the other gang. So,
when the Bloods are killing Crips, they're doing a civic service. Next same thing can be said about the Crips killing Bloods. It's when they're shooting the normal people that it's bad.
Next article is from PC World. Now, there's a new version of Windows 10 getting ready to roll out. It's the anniversary update. Sort of like a service pack. Well, they're disabling the ability to turn Cortana off. Microsoft made an interesting decision in the Windows 10 Anniversary Update, which is now in its final stages of development before it rolls out on August the 2nd. Cortana, the personal digital assistant that replaced Windows 10's search function and taps into Bing's servers to answer your queries with contextual answers awareness, no longer has an off switch. Similar to how Microsoft blocked Google compatibility with Cortana, the company is now cutting off the plain vanilla search option. That actually makes a certain amount of sense. Unless you turned off all the various cloud-connected bits of Windows 10, there's not a ton of difference between Cortana and the operating system's basic search. Microsoft even says as much. With Windows 10 Anniversary Update, the search box is now Cortana. Microsoft said in a statement, customers can expect the same great search experience powered by Bing and Microsoft Edge with the added benefit of Cortana's personality. Well, being as the fact that on my Windows 10 desktop, I don't have a digitally rendered hot naked chick to do the searches for me, naming it Cortana was deceptive. And, oh, she was blue, too, wasn't she?
Early games, yeah. I think they may have made her more flesh toned now.
Oh, okay.
But she's a bit blue.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with the Halo games for a very long time. But Yeah, and they go on about how wonderful this is, but I don't want a search experience. I just want to find my shit. And I don't like Cortana because Cortana is tracking everything you do on your machine so that it can search. And the fact that they're disabling the ability to even turn it off, although to be fair, if you check right now, like I've run AT Beacon and I've gone through on my main rig and turned all the Windows 10 stuff off. Let's just go to Task Manager and scroll down. There's Cortana. Then they're sucking up 34.4 megabytes of RAM, but no CPU time. And obviously no network time. So, yeah, you already can't turn it off. They're just removing a UI option that doesn't do anything. So, the article goes on to suggest, that you can live with it, or you can try to turn it off as much as possible and then use something like Everything to do your desktop file searching. Everything's a replacement for Windows Search. Or you can just flat out install Linux. So, it's going to get to the point where you just install Linux and be done with it. You just got to wait on everybody's software to catch up. So, let's see. Looking at the clock. Yeah, we can do this last story. I don't know. Do you have a thought on the Cortana thing?
I'm sort of caring, but most of the weird things I search for, I'm searching on the web, and that's just going to be my browser history.
Yeah, that's the thing. Cortana's all about searching the web and shopping and everything all at once, and it's like, and like your email if you use the Windows Mail apps and all that other stuff, and it's like... Yeah,
but I'm not going to be doing that through Cortana. I'm going to be doing that through Mozilla.
Yeah, the only thing I ever do with the Windows search box is usually look for an app I forgot to set a shortcut up for. Or, I'm looking for a document that I've lost somewhere.
Yeah, I'm looking for a program or a document. On occasion, if I don't remember how to change a setting,
yeah,
I'll try to do their help function. But right now, at least the last time I did it, and the last time I used it wasn't even on Windows 7. It was on, God, what did I have before Windows 7? Probably XP.
It took a while to find what I was looking for. I think there was the time I put Linux on your machine as a joke to see how long it took you to notice.
Yeah, I would have noticed whenever I went playing games.
Yeah, you noticed when you went to launch WoW, I think.
Yeah. Like what? WoW's not fucking working. What the hell?
Yeah. I tried to walk you through installing Wine, and you said fuck it and just put Windows back on the box.
The only thing I've used it for is if I don't remember how to change a setting, I use it to find a setting. So I'm asking Microsoft how to change something in Microsoft. I don't care that they know that I'm asking.
I think it's because Microsoft wants to compete with Google on the whole marketing thing. So it's like, hey, we can get data off the desktops. Package all up as, a personal digital assistant. And some people are going to like it. Some people really will. But, if you want to use it, use it. I personally don't. But I'm paranoid, so.
And honestly, if you're already using Google to search for things, how much are you already being tracked?
More than you'd like to admit, probably.
So you're probably already being tracked. The downside with Windows is they can tack on a CD.
Well, not only that, but...
One other thing that they can try to say, this actually belongs to somebody.
Well, not only that, but I mean, if they can go through the files on your desktop, I mean, if I pull up Notepad or Sublime Text and I'm sitting there bashing out code or personal notes or some shit like that, I don't expect that to get indexed and sent to a server at Microsoft, you know what I mean?
Now, that would be an issue if they're actually going through your Word documents and indexing them.
They are. If you go look at Cortana, the settings for it, it says Learn About Me. And it does that, and it'll tell you right there in the menu, by using your typing and e-ink information. Well, where I work right now, it's a financial. I don't want Microsoft randomly sampling what people are typing in from their workstations all day long and sending it up to their servers, because that's going to violate so many fucking laws.
That's going to be a same issue if any hospitals go to Windows 10.
Absolutely.
Patient information can't go to Windows. or can't go to Microsoft.
Now, the Enterprise editions make it a little bit easier to turn this stuff off, but it's all still on by default. So, that's a problem. All right, last article I have from tonight is from globalnews.ca. As the May long... Wait, what is it? When is this from? This is from May. Shit. Well, the article was still kind of interesting. RMCP's annual crackdown on dangerous driving. This year, the Mounties are armed with a new tool, a scope with long-range abilities to help put a stop to drivers who are putting lives at risk. I'm disappointed. I didn't realize this article was from May. I was going to make Pokemon Go jokes. Basically, they were giving people tickets that add up to $3,000 if they caught you texting and driving. And I was going to make a Pokemon Go joke, but I didn't realize how old this article was. Fuck.
Kind of thinking $3,000 is over-penalizing people.
Oh, that's actually for the third offense.
Okay.
Yeah, a first offense is $543. This is Canadian. A second distracted driver is $800-some-odd, and third is $3,000. So,
is that after court costs, or do they not fuck you
over
the same way?
I think that is
too.
Court costs. I think that is including court costs. Cause
yeah,
because they're talking
about
a total,
like your speeding ticket.
It's like the ticket is $386, totaling $880, something like
yeah.
that. So
I know around where
oh,
I
they're
live.
Adding. No, no, I misread. They're adding the first and second one. Wait a minute, the second one's cheaper? What the fuck? Okay, second one's cheaper. You get a discount.
We reamed you once. The second time, we're gonna be nice and y'all rub your balls. The last time, sandpaper condom, bitch.
So yeah, don't play Pokemon Go and drive. That's a bad idea. Now if somebody else is driving, I guess. But
I don't know. They made it a bit more difficult than Ingress driving. So they've really honed down on their speed thing because they want it to be a walking game or bicycling game.
Oh, that reminds me. Deicid, you know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
He sent me an Ingress invite the other day.
Nice.
It's like, wait, what? Like, wait, I'm like level 7 or something. I haven't played Ingress in forever, but I mean, it's like, really, dude?
Is he Enlightenment?
I don't know. I didn't see. I haven't talked to him forever. But you might get a hold of him. I thought I gave you his number at one point. I'm just laughing at that because it's just like, fucking really? Talk about being late to the party. So. Anyways, let's go on to this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, two things up for Digital Dojo tonight. First is a very interesting website, Full Stack Python. This is a website, well, it's kind of a combination website and book. Pretty much it's a tutorial on using Python web apps, full-on web apps, how to deploy them, how to set them up, how to write them. So very good website for... yeah, using Python to do web apps. It's not really much else to say about it, except it's nicely put together, and I think you can actually pull the book down if you want to copy it. So, pretty interesting. And then the last thing I have for tonight is a GitHub project from the Netflix account called Scumbler. This is a web service that periodically searches for things. You go in and set up a search, whether it's Google, YouTube, Facebook, whatever. And then this takes actions based on the results it finds in that search. So, like, if you had it searching YouTube, I think, if I understood the wiki, I haven't actually had a chance to play with this, you could have it, like, download the videos, transcode them, do something with them, or just, you know, have an index of shit for you to go look at. So maybe you could have it collecting news articles you want to watch. But, I think Netflix is kind of the idea that they got it set up watching their own web servers to hit pages they need to go clean up. But I can see a lot of different uses for this, so it's worth exploring. Worth exploring. But Anyways, that's really all I've got for tonight. 10:30, so we did an hour on the spot, even though the broadcast box has been flicky. That's my fault, since I went and updated it to Windows 10 just to get it done while it was still free. I'm amazed they haven't extended that yet. I was fully expecting them to get right down the wire and say, yeah, well, due to customer demand, we're extending in another 6 months or something like that. They haven't done it.
Yeah, they're going to let it expire and then redo it again here in a few months.
Ah, well, that's a thought. But that's all I got tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We've just recently redone the website. I'm hoping to get some articles up on there. I know I said that last week. I got beat up at work this week pretty good, so I just haven't had time to write anything up. Be good to do it now. I just had to re-engineer the damn broadcast box, so...
all fresh in your mind.
Yeah. Figuring it all out again, so... And the new version of Mix will actually let you set a null output for the primary. The old one wouldn't let you do that, so it's actually a little easier to set up now for at least the TeamSpeak style setup we're doing. But I don't know. That's all I got. Madman, you have anything before I play the Pac-Man sound?
No, nothing.